One cold autumn morning in the early 1990s, I was in my first week of my first job as a journalist. I was working for BBC Local Sheffield, which is up north, for those who don't know geography. I was sent by my editor to interview the parents of a 13-year-old girl who, the previous day, had tragically killed herself, accidentally, by sniffing glue. Their only child. I had to find the house, the parents, and try to convince them to do a radio interview to warn other parents. I was very nervous, convinced that if I did indeed find the house and the parents, they would probably see me as some sort of heartless, uncaring journalist looking for the next sensational story and probably slam the door in my face. I did eventually find the house and knocked on the door. The father opened it, and the mother also appeared with him. After a couple of minutes of discussion with them, they let me in. I can tell you it was quite an emotional roller coaster. A lot of tears, upset. And I remember we were all sitting bizarrely on the dining room floor of the house. I had my microphone and we were sitting around and I was asking the questions and they were giving some answers. 30 minutes later, I came out. I was pretty emotional myself. And it'd been quite an experience for a young reporter. I think it was my first week, and this was quite something. It had also been something of an education. The parents had let me in, literally and figuratively. They'd opened up with their pain and suffering to a total stranger. I suppose it all boiled down to some sort of trust. In that place, at that time, and with those people. It was the start of a career journey that took me over the next 20 years to the BBC, the Times, the European Union, even a spell at NATO headquarters in Brussels, very short time. But for the last few years, I've been working as diplomatic advisor and speechwriter for the Middle East at the International Committee of the Red Cross in Geneva. I think it's fair to say my career has been something of an odyssey in different places. But despite the diversity of organisations I've worked for, there was one thread through the different jobs that I did. It only crystallised to me later what that was. It was all about trying to connect messages to audiences. Let's not say audiences, people. To report, to inform, to influence, to persuade. It was always about trying to connect messages to audiences. Writing news items for Radio 4, designing rule of law campaigns for the EU in Kosovo, writing speeches for the President of the Red Cross. It was all the same, trying to bridge the gap. Hence my photo. I needed another slide. I knew I was talking for too long. And I thought the bridge, I don't know if anybody knows where that is. Mostar, yeah. The Mostar Bridge in Bosnia-Herzegovina, a place that I know quite well, and I just think it's a lovely, harmonious photo. The point is, the bridge is the medium, the method. The bridge can be a news release, a presentation, a tweet, a speech, but they're all bridges. In the Red Cross, operating in virtually every conflict area in the world, connecting messages to audiences is vital so that we can fulfill our humanitarian mandate. We speak to all sides in all conflicts where we're present, building bridges. And yes, I mean all sides of the conflict. Let me give one example. Back in October 2020, we helped facilitate a prisoner exchange in that horrific conflict in Yemen. We were acting as a neutral intermediary between the warring parties, building connections, confidence with states and armed groups so that humanitarian work could be carried out. The end result of this particular example, circumstance, more than 1,000 prisoners exchanged. In this picture, Houthi rebels returning home to Sana'a, the capital of Yemen. Really great news for all concerned. Confidence building. It was the result of months of face-to-face meetings. negotiations, speeches, deals, promises, trust building. And the end result was so positive. It happened. In that place, at that time, and with those people. Physical presence, nonverbal cues, eye contact, time, predictability, credibility. All the ingredients for concocting, oh, that's so important, dish, trust. Speeches were a joy to write. And then came along a little thing we all know about, COVID. And I think we all scrambled to deal with the changing world. How to operate in the virtual world? How do you write speeches for a screen? How do you then deliver them? Which is the on button again? What about my volume? Is this background okay? How on earth are we going to build trust this way? I remember on one occasion, shortly after the huge blast in Beirut in Lebanon, if you remember, that's August the 4th, 2020, when a huge explosion took place in the port area and devastated a pretty good area of Beirut. I had to write a speech for a senior member of our organisation, and there was a gathering of the UN and other great and good organisations, online of course, to discuss the best ways forward. Everyone had to read a speech, and boy, I can remember what mix of angles and people were sitting at the tables, different clothes they were wearing, some at the camera, some not at the camera. You know, it was a real hodgepodge, I would say. And I remember the person I wrote the speech for, this senior member of the ICRC, it was all good and settled, the words were there, the angles right, the background, but my speech giver was so close to the camera, you could actually see his eyes moving from left to right and right to left. It was like watching a tennis match, utterly distracting. I'd been so proud of my hard-crafted words, and here they were lost in a sort of tennis game of eyes. Honestly, I remember it was such a shame, you know, your heart sank, and I'm sure many of us here have been in that position. Everyone was on a steep learning curve at that time. Not least world leaders appearing virtually at the UN General Assembly. Every year the UN has the General Assembly in September. World leaders usually go to New York and they stand at that podium with a green background and they deliver whatever they deliver. It's quite a set piece thing. But in September 2020, world leaders didn't travel to New York. They stayed where they were and they designed their various backgrounds. We probably recognize this gentleman. Just in case people didn't know, it was the Chinese flag there and the Great Wall of China behind him. And just in case you still didn't know, you have the little tag there saying China. So that's we can confirm that is the Chinese leader. And then we had the Prime Minister of Tuvalu, who, addressing the UN General Assembly and indeed the world and the world's media, thought that the background of a beach, maybe devastated, maybe not devastated, would be the right and appropriate environment to deliver his messages. Then we had the president of Mexico. Sort of very regal, and the sort of golden thing on top of his head. The collar could be a bit adjusted, actually mine could as well. But notice the little coffee cup that's there. I don't know whether it's full or not, but obviously quite a relaxed mode. But I think the prize goes for this gentleman. Prize for anybody who can tell me who that is? No, I don't know. It's the president of Tajikistan, who thought that obviously a bit of foliage would do the trick at the UN General Assembly. So, and this was just a small selection. So, as you can see, even world leaders were struggling to a certain extent. The point was that the empathy, the connection, the understanding, the self-awareness was gone, or nearly so, in this virtual world. That connection between message and audience based on trust was being broken. You okay? So it was clear that with so much at stake, and certainly in many of our organisations, and certainly at the Red Cross, we had to try and get it right. Enter stage right, the speechual. The speech in the virtual world, well, through a screen. So that's the question. Can you replicate to some extent a speech in the virtual world? Can we begin to call something a speechual? Can you generate the trust, the connection, virtually? The short answer, at least currently, I would say, is obviously no. You can never get that exact feeling, that exact chemistry. But perhaps we can at least try to reduce the risks and embarrassment that can be associated with speech writing in the virtual world. We've all been there, we all have insights, everyone in this room, and we've already discussed a little bit of this yesterday at the conference. In the Red Cross, we worked on it, not just speeches, but the whole communication diplomacy thing. How could we improve? We wrote a whole number of tips and advice internally, a lot of it obvious, to be quite honest. And I reduced it to technos simplos reductos, obviously just a key word into something, technos. Don't get caught out by technology. As you're about to make some important announcement about sending a refugee convoy across a dangerous and contentious front line, you don't want to be fiddling with your mute or unmute button or your headphones falling off. Credibility gone after months of negotiation wasted. Know what you're doing on the technology side. Again, we know these things. Simplos. Keep the appearance simple, clean, less cognitive load. Whistling kettles, howling children, screaming pets. You need to be blank, unassuming, non-distracting. At least the background needs to be. You want people to look at you and listen to your words. We don't want wandering eyes, cameras being switched off. Think about clothes, the colours and designs. One thing I learnt in the BBC was just wear certain clothes if a camera is on you. Otherwise, you're going to strobe. People are going to say, why is that person strobing? What do they say? I don't know. But look at the clothes. They look very strange. Because people are attracted, as we know, by the image. Take some effort to get to the words, to listen to the words. And reductos. Turn down the fancy allusions, the long words, the mixed metaphors. There's too much cognitive load again. Back to basic. Simple, short, sweet. Not only that, but turn down the length. There's only so much we can take. Forget your 20-minute speeches. It just won't work. And above all, keep the eye contact. Maintain the eye contact with the little white pinhead, which is the camera, or sometimes it's a little bit bigger, when you're delivering and when you're listening. It really does help to build connection and ultimately trust. Again, in the BBC, when you're first starting out and you're looking at a camera, it just seems bizarre. There's somebody behind this metal thing, it's black, and what, I've got to look in that exactly? And yes, you do. And in today's world, again, we know that. You've got to look in that camera because the thing that you receive back are people's eyes. They're looking at you. They really are looking at you. And that power of the eye contact, that somebody is reacting and listening to you, fulfills you, and you do it back, and you start to build a little bit of connection, a little bit of chemistry. Another thing I do is when I'm delivering speeches, or I'm recommending people when they're doing speeches, is again, to try and avoid the eye issue of looking at the camera and then looking down at what you're saying, is to minimize the window where your text is. Make it small and stick it right under the camera as close as you can. And it takes some looking to see that you're reading it. And if you put a bit of relaxed language in there and a few nods and so on, people will believe that you're not reading something. It's little tricks of the trade. And it does work. We've already discussed it on the course, the case of the Ukrainian President Zelensky. It's a good example. There we have, and I try to find a picture which sort of, is behind the camera that he's speaking to. So you can't replicate the chemistry, that feeling of delivering a speech in that place at that time and with those people, at least not yet. But it can be done extremely effectively, even in languages foreign to the vast majority of the listeners. I was debating whether to play the next clip, but we've all seen it, I'm sure, but I think it's worth doing. I mean, there's literally four things. There's a green T-shirt, there's the back of a chair, there's the flag, and presumably a desk. Absolute simplicity of message. You can only look at that. His eyes are looking down some of the time. He doesn't always do that, but it's that pure simplicity. His language is slow and deliberate. We've heard his historical references in all the speeches that he's given to the different parliaments, and his passion. he comes close to replicating the chemistry in the room. That trust you feel when you know you're in a place, in a moment, in a speech that matters. Of course, these are unusual circumstances, and we had an interesting discussion yesterday, I think, in Terry's presentation about, well, it depends the moment, you know. You couldn't perhaps deliver that speech when there's no war in Ukraine or there's something not as tense, the stakes are not as high, then it's perhaps not going to work. But nevertheless, when the circumstances are there, emotion is flying around, passion, fear, determination. It all adds to the aura, the effect, the chemistry. But you still need the speaker and the audience and the right message. And it began to work at the ICRC. As I say, we speak to everyone and we speak to countries like Iran. It builds trust, that word again, and shows the humanitarian mission that we're engaged on. Iran has so much influence in the Middle East and beyond. It's important that an organisation, humanitarian organisation, like the ICRC, engages with the Iranians. So we managed to persuade their foreign ministry to take a lecture on virtual diplomacy, delivered virtually, of course. So a couple of months ago, my colleague and I wrote and delivered a speech on virtual diplomacy, trying to put into practice some of our thinking. So we were engaged in virtual diplomacy with them, and the subject of the virtual diplomacy was virtual diplomacy. A bit Russian dolls there. But it went down well, and there was more than 80 serving Iranian diplomats who engaged in that in a virtual environment. And we were able to explain the mission of the ICRC, etc. But it showed their openness and their willingness to engage on such an issue. And from our perspective, we were able to connect with them, to engage with them on a topic which is obviously quite relevant. So we in the ICRC were learning as we were going on and trying to pull the lessons together, share them and discuss them with other organisations. So the fundamental aim of us speech writers is to make the connection, bridge the gap between message and audience. The bridge is built on a bedrock of trust. And with the right leader, the right techniques, it can work very well. The speech wall is the answer to our problems. Looking back to those days in Sheffield, South Yorkshire, more than 20 years ago, it wasn't a speech I was making, although I suppose there was a little bit of an impromptu speech as I was standing on the doorstep speaking to the parents and trying to explain why I wanted to do an interview with them, and they let me in. I suppose that was a sort of little speech that certainly wasn't scripted or planned. But imagine trying to do that virtually, through a screen. Trust me, tell me about your sadness and your pain. I think it'll be some time before we can actually do that virtually. That sort of concludes what I wanted to raise and talk about now. Finally, I just wanted to say thank you to Brian. Where is he? Thanks, Brian, for your great organisation of this conference. I've only joined this organisation last year. This is my first conference. And thank you to Guy as well for your organisation. Express my appreciation and acknowledgement. And the reason I'm doing it at the end is because yesterday in Terry's training, he said, whatever you do, don't start a speech with acknowledgements. Put them at the end. So that's why I'm doing it now. So I've learned something already and putting it into practice. Thank you for listening. These are a couple of the blog items that we've written on virtual diplomacy and building trust in the virtual world. And thank you for listening.